Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for ranks, flanks, and kings of war. Join your hosts as they delve into the world of Panathar and bring you worldwide coverage of all things Kings of War.
I'm Chad Dudek, and you're listening to Countercharge.
And I'm Ralph Enough, and we're back again for another List Builder Studio, and this time we are with Chet, who I have been thinking about getting on for a long time, and I'm glad we were able to make that work. Chet, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm really excited about this.
I guess I met you for the first time at Masters. We had a great chat, and I've been thinking about it. I'm like, man, this guy has some interesting takes on list building. And I think, because we were talking about Kingdoms of Men, I think, yep. And Goblins. So I'm really excited about, you know, really diving in and learning your process. You know, you're Mid-Atlantic, so that kind of says something about you, right? You got to be a good list builder in the Mid-Atlantic.
Best region. You know what I mean? You gotta fight through to get any kind of recognition in the best region here. So I was a little nervous for a while because they weren't going to count Masters as a regional. And I was like, okay, so that by having Masters, we lost out on Mountaineer and then Pilgrimage moved. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm doing the math. I'm like, I need to get the three events. And I have a really young club. And so when we go to Crossroads, I'm there for fun. You know what I mean? I've been to three Crossroads. I've only lost one game at Crossroads, but I usually go with a really young team. So like sometimes my team, you know, we kind of stay at the middle of the lower table. So they're like, oh, here, take this win. I'm like, all right. So like I'll play these games and Crossroads isn't where I pull my points from. So when that became one of the three to get me into qualifying this year, I got a little nervous, but with Masters being a thing and, I think the Loaded Dice Club is actually looking forward to in March. We haven't settled everything down yet, but you can look forward to maybe seeing a fully loaded GT in the Wilkes-Barre region.
And for those that don't know, Chet did remind me that is from The Office, right? That's the general area.
It is.
And I should say the American version of The Office.
True story. We're not in England.
Even though, you know, we play Kings of War and we kind of feel like we are sometimes, but with the way they spell center.
My wife gets mad at me all the time because I'm like, okay, so what's your dream vacation? I'm like, I want to go to England and I'm going to play a lot of board games. You can come too. But what I'm not doing, I'm going to check out castles. I got to see Mantic HQ. I got to go to all the nerd pilgrimage stuff, you know?
Well, Chet, to get us started, why don't you give us a sense of who you are and where you're from?
I'm Chet Dudek. I'm from the Mid-Atlantic. I live in the Wilkes-Barre region of Pennsylvania, which is right around where the office was, you know, based. I got into Kings about 3.5 years ago. They didn't have anybody in the region that had played it. I ran into the system before the old world died, before Warhammer Fantasy died. And I remember seeing the first time I ever saw Kings played, I saw two guys playing at the store. And I remember like looking and going, oh, what's this? And like, you know, this is back in the old fantasy days where we thought we were better because we had a more complicated rule system and like just turning your movement required some sort of degree. So like when they're like, oh yeah, you move it up and you just turn it 90 and you can do this. And I'm like, ha, that's too simple. No, thank you. And then fantasy expanded, then blew up. And then, you know, I kind of bumbled around for a while, X-Wing and, you know, board games and whatever. And then I was like, man, I just miss fantasy. I have all these minis still. I want to get going. And I remember, I think it was at the end of second, I got the books, tried to get a couple friends into it, couldn't get it to stick. And then a few months later, I was like, no, I'm just going full on this. I carried the book with me every day to work while I'm sitting there. Sometimes you get stuck on night shift. I'd read the book. People be like, what's that? I'm like, this is a game called Kings of War. I'm going to learn it. We're going to play it. And then I'd bring my minis because if I got stuck on overnight, the only thing that would keep me awake was painting miniatures. So, you know, staff would see it overnight. Kids would walk by and be like, what's that? And I'm like, that's a dinosaur. I'm going to make it into a chariot. Don't worry about it. This is Kings of War. And I got like two or three people interested. And then I reached out to my old nerdy friend group, two or three more. Now we got like a club of like 17, 18 people. But, you know, I just played the first game with, one of my soccer, like I coach soccer for my kids, one of the soccer dads was like, what's that game you missed the tournament for? You missed this one soccer game for? I was like, oh, I was at Masters for Kings of War. He's like, well, show me your miniatures. I'm like, so at first I thought he was just like, oh, I heard you play games. I'm like, oh, he's gonna make fun of me, right? Because, you know, it's a sports thing. And then I'm like, he's like, no, I kind of want to see it. I want to play the game. I want to do the thing. I'm like, you know, just anywhere and everyone. I'm interested in getting more players because that lets me play it every week.
I got to know, though, is Loaded Dice just a poor man's nerd hammer?
Oh, I mean, we have new members, so there's that.
So you're saying they're aging out. You're the new guard.
They met each other in high school, just stayed friends, and then picked up two people who left other clubs. That's the extent of their growth. We get like 5 new players a year. We haven't got our name on the Cornwall Cup. We're working on it. But we've got Adam Wardle. He won best of the rest. We're getting there. We're maturing as a club. I'm telling you, you got to watch out for Will's Dwarves are a force to be reckoned with. So he's been giving me a lot of work.
I know you play Goblins because you took them to Masters, but what else do you play?
Yeah, so I had a lot of success with Goblins this season. Before this season, I ran a different army. Every 2 events, I'd change up armies. And I had Nature back when the Air Elementals were hot. I was one of the first ones to kind of run that scouting list where it was like all trees all the time, push up in there. I had some success with that, but then honestly, it wasn't fun to play against. And it took me, I went to Pilgrimage that year because I did well with it at Crossroads. I went to Pilgrimage and I played 3 Nature armies. So Nature on Nature, 3 out of 5 games. And it was exhausting. And I mean, cagey is a word, but like tedious was like the frustrating part. And then I would play some other people and I'm like, so, especially playing newer players, I'm allowed to move up because it's an air elemental. I can pivot once and then I can pivot again. And now I can surge it into your backfield. And they're like, wait, what? And there was this look of like, that's not fair. And I could see people weren't having fun playing it. And it wasn't all defense 6, but it had enough defense 6 to be annoying. That's when I decided, I'm like, I'm going to shift over and I'm going to focus on Goblins because I didn't realize people don't like playing Goblins either. But I was like, well, in my Nature list, you're lucky if you kill a few things. Goblins, you're definitely going to kill some stuff. You're going to walk away from the table. You're going to say, look at all that I put in the box. And I'm going to say, yep, and it's 700 points. So Goblins, I have all the human armies. Night Stalkers was the first Mantic army I really worked on. I have Nature, like I said. Trident Realms, and I do have an Ogre army, but I haven't put it together yet. I gave my old Ogre army away to a buddy of mine who's looking to play. Sold an Orc army. That was a bad idea. I sold it just thinking this guy's going to play me now, and then he just disappeared. Took the good deal and left.
That's the worst, when you like give somebody a sweetheart deal and then they're just gone.
But yeah, most of my success came from, I did pretty well with Kings of Men at Crossroads this year with them. And I think I went 4-1 at Pilgrimage last year, this last season with them. I was already qualified with Goblins. So I'm like, all right, I'll run Kings of Men. Nobody sees Kings of Men on the table and goes, Kings of Men. It's like the generic mid-level army. So it became like I can make this work. So that was the challenge for me.
Chad, are you ready to go in List Builder Studio?
Yeah, let's do it.
The List Builder Studio.
Well, to kick us off, what draws you to an army? Is it like the model range? Is it how an army plays? A perceived weakness? The rarity in your local scene? You know, what is it that sparks you to play a specific army?
So what draws me to an army is I like playing the army that no one's playing. I like playing the army that people don't think is good because I get a lot of joy out of saying like, you didn't think they were good. And then when you win with it, I cannot stand playing the best army out there. And the first thing I look at when I go to any GT and they announce like who's out there and what the lists are is how many other people are running my army. And if it's more than 2 other people, I'm like, oh, I got to change armies. I can't do this. I can't be one of like 7 Nature lists. I can't be one of 6 Goblins. That's why I stopped running Goblins at a certain point last year, because people started running a lot of Goblins in the Mid-Atlantic region. And I'm like, well, I don't want to just be another Goblin player.
So are you a hipster in other parts of your life or just with army selection?
It's mostly just army selection.
Fair enough. When you're building a list, do you consider like, you know, the background story, or are you more leaning towards maybe the play style?
I like an army that has a lot of options. I like an army that I can be like, I can make an alpha list out of this, or I can make, I can make a trash list out of this. I can make, I don't really do shooting armies very often, but I can do mixed arms. I can like, I don't want, like, that's kind of the reason why I didn't really care for the orcs initially, is I felt like all the lists just kind of felt like a grindy infantry build. And they also felt like they were, I mean, at the time there wasn't as many choices, but everything hitting on threes being crush one felt like easier than trying to make a unit of foot guard work, or trying to make pikes work, or trying to make, you know, goblin rabble do something in a game. And the other thing I don't like individuals. I've written a million of them and I can't get myself to run a Brother Mark list, is because they're just so shy on inspiring sources that score. I don't really care for individuals. I don't think you get what you pay for.
When you're looking at a new project, though, where does the inspiration come from? Is there a common source?
I mean, it could be anywhere. My goblins, I was inspired by like World War II pinup art. So I thought, you know, kind of like this lunatic with a glue gun, I'll make all these units and throw goblins on top of it. And then painting it up to have that like a sexy goblin mechanic, it's just funny to me. And then, you know, for my kingdoms, I went with an African themed list because I just didn't see any representation for it. It's all European armies, a lot of Japanese armies. And I'm like, oh, I mean, there's these really cool Zulu models. I'm like, let me rock a whole list around that. And then the challenge of not just finding an SDL or a model range that has cool minis, but kind of forcing myself into a corner where I kind of have to make the minis and kit bash until I can find some sort of a winged beast that fits my theme. Then I end up with flying hippos. Like, it's a fun little challenge for me. So like, I look back at my earlier themes. I had my Night Stalkers was Cthulhu based. I had Wrath of Kings for the Trident Realms. They're just cool miniatures, but that army kind of fell out with me because it didn't feel like it had a theme. So do I pull it right from the Mantic book? No. I do like the Mantic lore, but that's not what draws me to an army. What's this going to look like as a cohesive? What's the basing going to be? What's the theme of the army going to look like visually without me having to like write a paragraph and tell you what the story is? I want you to see it and know what the story is. That gets me excited.
Where do you start with list building? Like, what's job number one for you when you're sitting down to build a list?
Usually I think about, what sort of list do I want to run? Am I trying to build a balanced list? Am I trying to build a alpha list, a shooty heavy list? And then the other two things, there's three things that always pop in my mind. What are my scoring and inspiring sources? How can I get the most drops? And how good is the chaff? I am drawn to an army by chaff more than by a hammer unit. I'll run medium hammers all day long. I don't really love your big crush 'em hammer. I want to have to get into your flank to make my unit effective. And crummy, quick chaff, that's what sold me on Kingdoms. When they took away Lightning Bolt, you don't have to spend anything. Dude, my wizards run around with no spells, riding on a carpet, jumping in the way of dangerous things. It's so annoying and fantastic. I love chaff. Chaff is what sells the army. For Trident Realms, it's all about title swarms. Goblins, the whole army's chaff. So, you know, like if you spend more than 120 points on something, it's expensive. Well, 130, it's expensive. So the whole army is averages 100 points. So everything's chaff and goblins. I mean, nature has Pegasus and they have the woodland critters, but I love those flying wizards on pegs. Love the flying heroes. That's what draws me in. So that's where I start. What's my chaff? How am I going to use it? How am I going to deliver my units that need to be delivered? Is it going to be, well, what's the theme of it? Heal, whatever.
Is there a set number of chaff pieces you're looking for? And, you know, how do you consider anti-chaff?
I minimum want 3 chaff pieces at least. If I can get more in the list, I will absolutely do it. Because, like, you don't need to have crazy hammers. You just need to get in the scrum, block their unit that wants to countercharge you, and then you can kind of play around and you're dictating the pace after the initial engagement. When you could throw a 65 point model in front of a 200 point, 300 point hammer unit and they can't see past it, it doesn't matter if you did no wounds. They can't get past you. All they can do is kill your little wizard. And that gives you 2-3 turns to clean up what you're doing, turn and face the other thing. And now by that time, they've killed your wizard and you charge that. The more chaff, the more control you have. I mean, when I build a list that's got any element of speed, like goblins, a little different, because goblins, you're okay getting charged by everything. You're like, come hit my horde. You're going to have to spend a lot more than 125 points to break this thing, you know, and then I'll get whatever you hit me with, or I'll shoot you, or I'll flank you and all this stuff. But when you're running knights and they're 190 points and they're not expensive and their nerve is low and they're not very good, you have to ask yourself, what's my counter to the chaff? And a lot of times it's an equal sized unit that's going to press up right in front of my mini hammer or my actual hammer. And that's how I'm getting the advantage. What am I doing in that even speed standoff? When I have my generals on a winged beast tucked right behind the wizard and they're both 50 mil base, I throw that right up the field, avoid any flanks. But now that other guy who spent 300 points on his dragon or 300 points on his hammer unit is forced to either charge a 65 point wizard, or they're forced to back up and they're giving me control of this board space, which allows my second layer knights and things to press up in that into that opening.
You know, and you mentioned scoring units versus individuals, and it sounds like you don't like individuals. What would make an individual be worth you taking?
If he's a grony snark, or at Pilgrimage GT, I ran a standard bearer with the loot, and the loot was frustrating because, you know, it's 1 out of 4 times you fail it. But that very inspiring did help. And if a individual is giving you, maybe you need flyer protection, that makes sense. The type of armies I like to run do fall kind of into that. I don't know if this is a thing, but like alpha trash. I'll throw a bunch of things at you. Individually, these knights won't take you off, but in combination with this other unit and this, you know, general winged beast in the flank, or this, you know, I'm trying to get into Roidia, so like these guys on winged Aralas hitting the flank, like that can put some work into it. But the delivery of it's important, and I'm not worried about flyers because I am the flyers. I have more flyers than they have, or I have more speed than they have, or I have more chaff that they're going to have to chew through than I do. Or if you're running goblins, I don't care what you charge, and I have enough shooting to turn around and face. So there are units like a Grony Snark that could get me into it. It's why I can't really get into Trident Realms. I think you have to run a lot of individuals to really make the most of that list. Brother Mark, I feel like you've got to run individuals to get the most out of that list. And I just personally have seen too many games where my opponent will have, you know, 2 vampires left on the board at the end, and they lost.
Yeah, because they don't score.
Don't score. They just lose.
When you're building a list, though, are you trying to ask questions to your opponent, or are you really more looking towards being able to answer the questions they ask you?
No, I'm looking to answer questions. Like, I already know this is the Mid-Atlantic. Everybody and their mom runs defense 6. Defense 6 and heal. Defense 6 without heal. It's just super high defense or really fast alpha. So my questions are, if I'm matched up in speed with somebody, what's my answer there? Because I don't want to get into who's going to get tired first and push their guys into charge range. I also ask myself, do I have enough to crack a defense 6 unit in one go if the stars align and I've got this and this? Thinking I'm going to like chip away at defense 6 with Celestial Restoration and the Shroud of the Saint, every army has access to heal. Not to mention most of those, like dwarves, I mean, they've got their Iron Resolve, they've got their Radiance of Life, Nature's the same way. They're going to run a lot of Defense 6. Abyssal Dwarves are the same way. You know, there's just a million lists that if you don't break them in one go, I don't run grindy lists. So if I don't crack you on the first go, I'm in trouble, or I've set you up to swarm you in a later turn. So I'm wondering, what do I do against defense 6? How do I have more units? Because I'm convinced turn 0 is where you win and lose games. If I have more units than you, I know where you're going to be. I have perfect information to drop that thing that I've been hiding, whether it's a ballista and I'm there to shoot clean lines at your giant all game, or I can then drop my mini dragon on the flank with no resistance, or I can put it on the flanks to drop two or three on the same flank and really throw you off. More units gives me more information. A lot of times I'll give up on big, nasty units so that I could have more little units so I could flood the field. So you're never getting the trade value. Even if we're going one for one, you're not gonna get what you are getting out of me.
And let's just talk about unit size. Are you a guy that likes regiments, or do you have a tendency to go to hordes? I mean, like, talk to me about the unit sizes that you're rocking.
I feel like that really depends on the army. I really do. Like, goblins, you can't avoid buying hordes. I've tried it. It doesn't work. It's not what they want to do. I've run, like, the fast goblin list, but even then, you're probably better off throwing in a couple of hordes of chariots to get the unlocks you need. I do like large infantry hordes. One, they're a lot more fun to paint. They're a lot easier to paint, and they do tend to not have the same problems infantry has. You know, they hit hard. They can stay in a fight for a while. They usually have some sort of heal or wound mitigation. They have that ability to do that. Hordes in goblins, and I've run pikemen hordes. I and you know, large infantry or large cav hordes. I really like regiments, though. I think the mobility, it's a mobile game, and anything small and nimble, the goblin chariots, kings on chariot, the generals on winged beast, I'm even starting to come around to the hero on peg. I think that it just, if you can make moves and you're not restricted, that makes a lot of difference. So scouting nature army really gives you it surprises your opponent because you move. Mobility is key. So the size of the unit, the bigger the unit, the less mobile I am, the less I'm dictating who charges me, and I'm just relying on high nerve and whatever my defense value is to let them run the pace. I don't want to let them run the pace. I want to set the pace. That's more fun for me. Yeah, typically smaller units. I'm a big MSU guy, and when you're dropping hordes, it's harder to get as many drops in there, unless you're doing like halflings or goblins or... You know, I don't really run undead, but like that kind of unit.
Do you try to have multiple speeds in your list to give them different threat ranges?
Yeah, I do. Even my goblin list, which was the one I ran for most of the year, some variation of it. The one I ran at Masters had Grony Snark and three chariots, but everything else was, and the Magwans. Everything else in the list was speed 6 at best. So it was a very slow list, but I could have a fast wing if I wanted it. I feel like you want to bring enough to the table that sometimes your opponent presents you with an opportunity. They'll be like, my list is no good against shooting, or my list struggles against speed, or my list struggles against high defense or nerve. And if you want to have that tool, that you can exploit that weakness in their list building. I'm not saying you need to make your whole list that thing, because you can't determine that going into a GT. But like, if I have a little bit of shooting and I know that they're like, I really don't want this Aeronauts unit getting shot by anything. And I'm like, great, I'm going to throw my bolt throwers here and I'm going to shoot that thing. Or I'm up against an ensnaring army and I'm like, oh man, well, good thing I have some shooting. I can take care of that. Or they're really tanky and they think they're going to handle it, but I get to make all the charges. So I have the range distance, or I have the chaff that covers against their speed. You just want to have answers to questions because they're going to ask you something. And they're probably going to ask you multiple things. And that's where I feel the thing is not about asking them. That's giving them control. I want to go there prepared to handle whatever they brought.
And in terms of flying, it sounds like you are a big fan of flyers.
Oh, I love flyers.
How do you, though, account for their flyers?
Yeah, I got my own flyers. What do I care about their flyers for? You're going to charge a Pegasus. You're going to charge a wizard on a Pegasus. He doesn't have spells anyway. What does he do? What else is he doing with his life? He's reading a book on a carpet. He's got nothing to do. You know, you could charge my, I don't know, I just ran one with the scouts. Yeah, you kill my scouts, go for it. If you don't kill them, they'll come sit you down. And if you do kill them, great, I'm going to charge you afterwards. And then you're going to lose whatever's way more valuable than the scout unit you have. Even when I ran Night Stalkers, absolutely love those phantoms. Those phantoms cause headaches. They get in the way. Maybe they jump on a piece of terrain, give you an unhindered charge. I think that has really been driving a lot of what I do against flyers. I don't trust myself to shoot them off the board, and I don't care about individuals jumping in their way and hoping I get a damage. No, let me throw a wizard out there. He's height 4. Unless you're a dragon, you can't see past him. It is what it is. You can't see anything. You got to charge him anyway. I don't care if I didn't do a wound. That's the answer to flyers. Shoot them or fly faster.
Are you a universal battle guy? Do you use UB to build lists or?
I'm all table. I mean, like, you saw how long it took for us to get this thing started. I'm not exactly...
You're not a tech-savvy wizard.
I like board games and tabletop games because I don't... Honestly, I can't play video games either. Like, video games, I could play Kings of War for, like, 10 hours straight and be fully engaged and just as focused on game four as I am on game one. But if you ask me to play a video game for, like, 30 minutes, you've lost me. I can't focus. I'm disinterested. I don't have the human, I need that human interaction. UB takes too long and it's too finicky and like you could lose on, there's a computer glitch. I twisted the thing too wrong and you lose that coolness of like, these are the miniatures. Look how cool this thing looks. This is, yeah, I love people who love it. It's great. I'm glad they have a tool that helps them get better. It's not for me.
When you're building a list, though, I'm assuming you're thinking about the types of archetypes that you're going to play against, you know, shooting, Alpha Strike, a grind list, or do you not consider that? You're just like, I'm going to just do me and I'm going to play my game and you're going to react to me.
No, I try to consider all of it. It's what do I do against Alpha? Is this list prepared to handle Alpha? Is this list prepared to handle defense six? Does it have tools to handle shooting? Now, I won't lose my head over it if it's got a weakness to something like my Kingdoms of Men list. Has a couple of units that aren't great against shooting, but you're not going to have a lot of time to shoot me anyway. I'm coming across the table so fast. And if you do want to shoot the ones that are really vulnerable, like you shoot my pike hordes, it's probably a good call, or pike regiments, but then you're not shooting the stuff that matters. Like these guys are slowly plodding up the field. They're not doing much but carrying tokens. You shoot the stuff that's coming down on you in turn two, or you're going to feel bad about it. And a lot of it's just giving myself the units to throw cover in front of stuff. And then if they shoot my wizard and it dies, oh well. If they shoot my wizard and it doesn't die, cool. If they shoot it in waivers, I'll deal with it. It's not important. If I get to use it again later in the thing, it might jump on a token. Chaff solves a lot of those problems. But if you don't have an answer in your list building to defense six, you're not going to get it. You can get all the flanks you want. I remember... playing Joe Borghese, and I was so happy. I'm like, oh, I got my Lugged troop, ran through the woods, used the new Strider ability, hit you in the flank, and I did like four wounds. And I was like, that's crazy. And I did the math, and I go, no, that's normal. That's a normal amount of wounds. And then like they just shrug it off or heal or get Iron Resolve. And I'm like, yeah, if you don't have the tools for defense six, like my list sometimes has to triple charge in the flanks things on defense six to deal with it. That's part of it. You got to have an answer for it. My goblins, I had to play around with it a bit. That was probably the biggest adjustments I made. The other thing I think about more so than the other armies and what they're going to do to me is how is my list going to be mobile on the table and how am I going to deal with terrain? So like, I know somebody's going to have to deploy outside of a forest or outside of a lake or outside of a field. And I want to know when I build the list, who's the guy taking that, who's taking that L? Who's trudging through the terrain? Or who has Pathfinder? Who has the Strider if I've got it? My Nature Army, they don't care. Everybody's got it. Night Stalkers are a funny one because they don't have to deploy in any kind of particular way. You don't really have to play with battle groups or anything because everything can inspire, throw your healing guy next to the stuff that wants to be healed. Other than that, fast stuff goes with fast stuff. If you want, you can do whatever you want with that army on the table and you'll probably be okay. But Nature, when you're rocking like 12 drops, yeah, you're going to scout, but you got like 12 drops. They know everything about what you wanted to do. So better hope it works.
Let's talk unit strength. I'm assuming you're a guy that likes lots of it.
I like lots of scoring units. I don't really care about overall unit strength. I'm not like, let's get this unit strength 4 horde. I'd rather have 2 unit strength 3 regiments. Or, better yet, some chaffy unit strength 1 things that can jump on objectives and do whatever. I hate wasting 120 points or 140 points sitting on a token when I could have done the same thing with 60. Big on unit strength stuff. My bolt throwers are kind of getting reduced in my next variation of the list I've got going because they don't score, and I'm not going to take cannons because they hit on fives. They're not reliable. So they're up on the chopping block. But yeah, unit strength is important, but it's more about the units that have unit strength than it is about how much overall unit strength I have.
What about the height? Do you consider having, do you try to have different heights? or you just don't, the heights are the heights. It doesn't really play into your list building.
Depending on the list. I keep going back to Kingdoms of Men and Goblins, but they're the ones I spent the most time with recently. My Goblin list was purposely nothing was taller than height 3. So everything could hide behind hills. Everything could hide, you know, behind each other. You know, everything was able to be screened in that way, and nothing's really blocking my long range shooting from being able to see its targets. Kingdoms of Men, lots of varied heights. You could say the same thing of like the Basileans when I run the Basileans, but there are a lot of height 3. You actually run into a lot of times where you can't see stuff. Those Beast Cav being height 4, pop them behind a hill. You can see over that hill. You're projecting threat. You're getting it back. But the way that I can layer my, you know, hero on peg, or my wizard on Pegasus, or my hero on Pegasus with my general winged beast is he's height 5 behind a height 4 unit. Even if you stuff the unit in front of me, I'm a nimble flyer and I can see just over the top of him. So yeah, height is important because if I'm putting something tall on the list, I want something there to block it. I know for a while you were running Kings of Men and you were trying the dragon with the monarch.
Yeah, the monarch.
Did you ever bring like hero on pegs or wizard on pegs to run as like a shooting screen for him? Or
yeah, I mean, the reality is I don't like dragons.
I feel you on that one.
I'm not a dragon guy. I don't want to spend 300 points for 2 unit strength. I mean, and I know with the monarch specifically, I know you have the ability to do things like give rally to the knights, and I think with the changes to Kingdoms of Men, like the ability to give a regiment of the ordered march for a unit of cav, ooh, I love that.
That might make that a possibility.
It goes back to, number one, it's less unit strength than you could be paying for, but also the number of drops, right? I have 300 points tied up in one single drop.
Right. If you give him any of those items, like I could drop him. Now, granted, you need a lot of unlocks for this, but I could drop him, pick up a general on winged beast, a hero on Pegasus with no spells, and a ballista for the same points. So I've just dropped 3 things. I've gotten 3 pieces of information out of my opponent with giving very little away, and I've got a screen and a shooting screen for my general.
Yeah, I mean, you could also drop the wings, right? Like, that's there are options to make him cheaper, but...
Yeah, but with no nimble, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, I just like, ah, there's just... To your point, I think I would just take more of the Pegasus, more winged beasts, more beast cavalry.
Yeah, beast cav make me change up my try to keep the points low. They're just so good.
Maybe you can answer this question. Why would you play Rodian when you could play Kingdoms of Men?
Because I want to help with the review. That's really the reasoning. No, okay, Rodian is that next level challenge.
We talked about inspiring a little while ago. Do you have a number of sources that you want? Like, do you have a certain number you're trying to hit, 1 per 500? Or just talk to me about how you think about inspiration.
It depends on the drops. If I've got like 16 drops, I want like 4 sources. Because especially depends on what the drops want to do. Most of my inspiring sources, like, they want to run off and do their own thing. Like in the Goblin list, I think I had Troll Bruiser, 3 Chariots, Grony, Flaggit. I gave him the loot. I wish I would have gave him the Mind Fog token, but I had 6 in that list. I ran 6 for most of the year. Even when I only ran 2 Chariots, I ran 3 Trolls. When I run Kingdoms, I run 4 sources. Roydia, I run 4 sources. Because they want to go fly out on the edges. Even when I ran a 12-drop nature list or a 13-drop nature list, I had 3 tree men, which is mean. I know, that's not nice. But then I had the Gladewalker Druid, who was also inspiring. So, I mean, I don't run any when I run Night Stalkers because I don't think it's worth it. You're like paying for Mind Thirst. You got to use it. You know, eat round 1 shooting, move on with your game, and go in there and do stuff. Yeah, I don't know what army doesn't do better with it. The math just changes dramatically when you make them roll it twice. So 4 is kind of my 3 is my bare minimum, but 4 is standard.
What about magic artifacts? Where do you sit on that?
Not big on them. I have a couple that I go to all the time. Inspiring Talisman, because it changes the nature of a unit, gives me that extra inspiring unit. Like when I run Abyssal Dwarves, is the Infernoc or the Infernox, one of the two. The little guy with the gun, he wants to have that inspiring talisman in the worst way. He's already got an aura that helps the infantry. He wants to stand between them, give them inspiring talisman. Now he's got 2 jobs, you know, 3 jobs, whatever. I also really like Jesse's boots. That's my number 1. Helm of the Drunken Ram. But if I'm spending more than 60 points on magic items, I'm probably going to drop some of them and get another unit. I can't spend 100 points on magic items. You might never see a list of mine with brew a strength or, you know, anything. You're lucky to see slashing on one of my units. I just don't want to run them. It's too many points. I'd rather have another unit. Yeah, no, I'm not big on them.
What are you thinking about in terms of spell casting when you're building a list?
Depends on the list. Like, nature wants and needs spell casting to be effective. So, like, you need to have surge. It's, if you're running a surge army, you don't have surge. You have just thrown away a ton of points and you've taken a lot of concern out of your opponent's head. It's, you ever run to a table, Rob, and you see like somebody goes like, oh, do you have any shooting? And then you say no. And they go, right? Like, you've just given them a present because they're like, okay, good. I was worried about shooting. Even light shooting makes them nervous, right? The same thing happens if you have a surge army and you go, like, oh, so how many surge sources do you have? They go, oh, I got this one. You go, oh, okay. Like, I don't have to worry about these weird long bomb surges. That cuts down my math and what I got to worry about, you know, exponentially. So, whereas if you've got a ton of surge sources, or another one question I always ask, do you have any shooting? What's your heal? I'm not big on like reading through every detail of their list. I kind of have a general idea what you can do. I just need to know if you got any heal, if you got any shooting. I don't really do it myself unless that's the theme of the list. Like I said, nature, you're not trying to trade units. You're trying to keep your units alive and kill their units. Oh, well, Night Stalkers, I definitely want to have some of the planar apparitions. I'll probably max them out, whether it's going to be one heal, two lightning, three heal. Probably not three heal, but you get the idea. Those are always fun. Like I said, Trident Realms, I have a tough time getting my head into them because there's too many individuals. You know, Bane Chant sometimes makes his way into my list. Sometimes it doesn't. I'm not married to the idea of magic. I don't have to have magic in my list for it to work.
How are you planning to think about command orders coming up when you're building lists?
I'm excited. I like anytime they add something new. I do in a small way because I don't want the RC to feel any kind of way. I love what they do. I think this is like the most balanced, most fun game I've ever played on tabletop by a long shot. Great community. I do worry about the complication creep. And the more tools you give experienced players, the wider the gap gets between the experienced players and the newer players. And that's why I love that some armies are better than others. I'm not going to take them. Like, go ahead, new guy. Rock the dwarves. They get better every clash, no matter what. So take them, order march, defense six, everything. You know, I'll have a heck of a time playing you regardless of how this goes. I made a little army just to prove I could with like $30 at Dollar Tree for a Forces of Nature army. And I was playing it and my buddy's son kept showing up and trying to play. And I was like, and he would always play that army. It was meant to be the new player army for them to do well. It's all defense six. It's easy to run. And I was like, bro, you want this army? He's like, no, you don't have to. I go, you want the army? He's like, well, I kind of do. But I mean, like, I'm like, just take it. Here you go. So like, you know, I like that there's certain things that make it easier. I think command dice, they make me nervous that it's going to help good players get better and newer players be more confused. But I trust the RC. I trust this game system. I don't think that's going to happen. So I'm excited for it. Anything new, it's always fun. I like that they refresh the game every year.
Command orders are just more options, right?
Right.
Regardless of how you get additional options in the game, you always run the risk of the skill gap widens, you know, and this is no different. Command orders as rolled out in this first Clash of Kings, they're not over the top.
Yeah, they're re-rolling one attack.
You were talking about how maybe all the armies aren't all created equal. Well, some of the other ones that are lower on the scale, maybe they got better commands. You know, orcs having the ability to have Pathfinder and Brutal Plus One.
That's huge. Great add-on. That was a really good insight because it doesn't initially feel like an orky thing to add, but they needed it in a way that a lot of other armies didn't. And you might start seeing some more orc armies on the table because that would be fun. You know, and I listened to the orc review and it made me feel bad about selling them to that one guy. I'm like, oh, I would put these guys on the table again. Yeah, no, I'm excited for it. I just don't know what all of them can do, and it is what it is.
Let's talk deployment. You know, how does deployment affect your list building? I mean, are you thinking about how this army is going to be deployed? How are you going to allocate the resources across the table?
Absolutely. I'm real big on when I put a thing in the list, I want to know how it's going to deploy. And when I get to the table, depending on what I've got, if I've got scouting, I'm looking at where do I want to be at the end of turn one. If I've got shooting, I want to see my lanes. But when I build the list, I don't want to, sometimes people build like a shooting army, right? And I'm not a big fan of that because there's a lot of feel bad moments on the other side of the table. I'm fine fighting against them. I don't want to bring them because if I do well with the shooting army, you didn't have fun. If I do poorly with the shooting army, I probably had fun anyway because I love kings, but you know, I might not have had fun. But a lot of times people will build it and they won't kind of take into account how many millimeters and how big that footprint is to concentrate that shooting. They just think this shoots, all these things are going to put fire on something. I could throw 100 arrows into one thing. It's like, no, you can't. You can throw 60 arrows into one thing, 60 into another thing, and 20 into something else. You're not going to be able to focus everything into the same target. So yeah, battle groups are important. I knew my goblin deployment, really, it was horde, you know, mincer, horde, mincer, horde, three war trombones, and my flagget inspiring everything. And that was like my first X number of drops every time I went to a table. But sometimes I would build it and thinking, oh, I can just keep doing horde, troll, horde, whatever. And that's not how the tables are ever set. You run into, there's a building here, there's a building over there, you're going to get into this forest, and you're going to be like, so knowing how they deploy is critical. I've watched a lot of people throw away good lists because they didn't know how to deploy the list. The list is fine. A buddy of mine, Matt, plays all the time, and he does a great job, but sometimes he's ready to get rid of a list when I'm like, dude, it's just a deployment thing. Just play around with where they land when you deploy them on the table. I know I helped another guy. He was struggling a lot with his thing, and it was already at the tournament. So I was like, well, let's work on your deployment, what you've got right here. And when we did that, his attitude towards his list turned around because we just looked at what tools he already had and played around with his deployment. He had a lot more success over the weekend because, you know, that's your turn one. You shouldn't be wasting a lot of time thinking about it. You already know what you're doing. You know what your list wants to do. And when you build it, there's some flexible pieces. You can add some flex pieces. Maybe this go on this wing. Maybe I'll double a wing. Maybe I'll put shooting over here. But you should know this is my center. This is my, you know, this guy always runs with this unit. If you don't know that, then you're going to get on the table and be like, oh, no one can keep up with my fast units and they're not inspired. So, yeah, you got to think about it.
Let's chat about terrain. How do you account for terrain when you're building your list? By your face, am I to read that you don't consider it? I got lots of units. Some are going to be in terrain. That's it.
Like, and I refuse to run Order of the Green Lady because it's too cool and too popular. And when people think Alpha Strike, they go, you know, Green Lady. And I'm like, no. Kingdoms, and like Kingdoms doesn't have any kind of it doesn't have any terrain mitigation. It's got giants if you want to get shot, and it's got, which I'm coming around after that orc review, I'm starting to think maybe I could work giants in there, but I don't know. But it's got giants, and then if you want the J boots. And by the way, I'm not mad they took away Pathfinder. I think that was a absolutely brilliant decision by the RC to give the lists a lot of variety and to give armies that do have Pathfinder the cool flex they deserve. You know, like the fact that Nature and Herd and Sylvankin all can kind of run through the woods no penalties, that's great. That's what they need to feel like their army. The fact that the halflings have those muster captains that can give everybody that like Strider aura is super exciting. That's why that's actually for the goblins. That's why I put in the flagget instead of the wizard once they changed Alchemist's Curse, because not only that, but the very inspiring. You're always, when you have three hordes side by side, one of them's always going to be running over something. So he's there to kind of like allow them to at least be hitting on fives. But my kingdoms list, yeah, terrain's an issue. And my pikemen usually will walk through it very slowly and they'll get there eventually. Or I'll just hide behind it, or I'll deploy my flyers into it so they can jump through it. But yeah, you got to think about terrain. Your deployment can't be so strict. Your battle groups can't be so large that terrain can block them up and force you from being able to use them. So yeah, terrain's a factor, but basically build your group small enough that you can get through like a, I don't know, 18-inch gap if you need to. You know, you can't expect the whole board to be open.
Let's talk scenarios. When you're building your list, are you thinking about, you know, how do you handle objective-based scenarios, movement-based, bluff tokens, loot tokens? We got these new progressive scenarios. I mean, are you conscious of what's out there, and are you adding stuff to handle these different types of scenarios?
Yeah, I can't. As much as I want to, I will not run an all alpha. I'm always going to have something that wants to carry stuff. Just in regards to that, though, just in regards to like the push and the token carrying scenarios, because there's so many. How many are there? Like 4 or 5 now?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of loot tokens. There's loot, there's plunder, there's push.
Stockpile.
And there's a new one called Bulldog, which is a progressive version of push.
I mean, that's a good third of the scenarios. You go to a GT, you're going to see one or two of those. So if you don't have anything that is okay carrying stuff and you go, I hope I don't see that scenario, you're setting yourself up. But other than that, no. No, I like to have some speed somewhere in the list so that I could jump on something if one of those. So like the goblins had the chariots and one wing it so they could jump on stuff if they needed to. That actually lost me a few games because I didn't have an element like that. I had to add a Pegasus into the list so that I could at least jump on some things. But yeah, that's important. But basically to the point of I want to have two token carrying pieces and one guy who doesn't hate it.
All right, here's some crazy questions. Do you consider having to play on a clock when you're building a list?
Oh my God. I just think about that all the time. I'm so slow. If I don't play on a clock, I can't finish a game. So yeah, no, I have to play on the clock, and it doesn't have anything to do with my list building. It just has to do more with practice. So that's it.
When you're building a list, are you thinking about, do I want this list to go first or second? Are you worried about that first turn roll?
No, I can't control that.
Yeah. What about the turn 7 roll? Same thing.
Yeah. I can't control that. So like, even like, it's like, I don't know, like when I roll snakes, it's like, oh man, that stinks. But when you lose because you rolled a 3 and you know you could have put more into it, that's when I beat myself up. I can't control snake eyes. I can make sure that a 3 does the job. Yeah, no, I don't care about that. First, second, it's not my choice. That's just dice.
How does the scoring system of the event you're going to, does that affect your list? Like if you're going to Blackjack or Northern Kings or one of the other many, I mean, do you think about that consciously?
Only to the extent of how well painted is this army. Because I remember the first time that I did well in an event, it was ACO. And I made it to top table and it blew my mind. I'd never been anywhere near top table. And it was like, I was like 4-0 going into the last game. And I'm up against Mike Atkins. And I didn't know it at the time. But even if I had won that game, my painting score was so much lower than his that I would have had to have like blackjacked him or something to end up being placed above him. And I'm like, man. So, you know, I have a lot of units that are, I have a lot of armies that are painted up, but that'll factor in like how much did they factor this in? You know, Northeast cares a lot about paint scores. Mid-Atlantic does, but not super a lot. So I still try to bring the best painted thing I have to it. So that's about all I care about when it comes to that.
Makes perfect sense. You know, this is the time of the year where we get a Clash of Kings book, and that's the annual update. How does that affect your list building? I mean, when we hit this time of the year, are you like taking a pause on list building to wait and see what happens? Or
this is my favorite. This is the purge. I'll have like 100 some odd lists or more in that team, and I just wipe them all out, start fresh. Because that, I don't know if you make a ton of lists, but at some point, I can't even find the list I'm looking for anymore because they're all like slight variations of like this one concept. You know, like this one is this one, but the wizard has a different spell and it's like a whole different name for the list. So in case I need to pull it up, but then I can never remember what I named it. So I love the idea that I can just dump all my lists, start fresh. That's great.
Yeah. What's the most overlooked thing that impacts list building?
That's a good question. What do you think the answer to that question is? Oh man, most overlooked thing would probably be, honestly, I think some people make the mistake of not having a preparation for the push type scenario, the token carrying. Because I've watched people lose games because they don't have they're like, well, I hope I don't get that scenario, and you're gonna get that scenario at some point. So that's probably the most overlooked thing. Yeah, that's I'm going to go with that.
Put your teaching hat on. You know, what is the most important question that a new player should be asking during list building?
why is this unit in this list? Every unit should have like 1 to 2 jobs.
Yeah. Touch on how hobby affects your list building. I mean, are you ever like, I mean, are you always this unit has this role and this is why it's in the list? Or are there ever times where you go, I don't know, I just want a Red Goblin Blaster in this ogre list.
All right. So when it comes to like building my armies and collecting armies, I just want to collect every unit in the army in at least 3. Like I want at least 3 of everything so that no matter what ridiculous list comes in my head, I can put that on the table. Sometimes I need more than that. And sometimes my list building is restricted by that. But hobbying, putting a model on the table just because it looks cool, I've definitely done it. But I'll usually, Kings is flexible enough that, you know, my goblins have been, they could be sharp sticks or they could be rabble. My Kingdoms of Men, my Zulu, like infantry guys have been pikemen. They've been militia mob. They have been shield wall. They have been a bunch of different things. So a lot of times I'd like to build it in a way that, you know, these chariots, these elephant chariots could either be honor guard or they could be a chariot from Kings of Men. So a lot of times I find a way to make them into a list. And Kings is great about that because not just within one list, but within multiple lists, you know, that Beast Cav is also the Forsaken. You know what I mean? They're also whatever other unit from what other faction. So the one thing I will do is I will not, even for practice games, I hate putting units on the table that are not fully painted and completed. I'm not a blank bases guy. I don't mind if my opponents do it all day long. You're good to go. I won't put gray units on the table. I've been playing since I was in high school. I need my painted units to see table time, not my unpainted units.
Yeah. How has your list building process evolved over time since you started playing at the tail end of second edition?
I only got in like a hand, like 2-3 games at second, and then I couldn't get a group together. So I kind of really came into it at third, but in list building has evolved. I think I've become more of a fan of chaff and than I even was in the beginning. In the beginning, I was a little more enamored with the magic items. And I think sometimes you see that with like, I don't want to say newer players, because there's a lot of really good players. Jordan Bolin, Marcelo Rocco play a lot of magic items in their lists. But I've definitely started to love that ogre type scoring, not individual, but looks like an individual guy. That large infantry model thing has really, really become a thing. So I valued mobility and nimble a lot more than original. So yeah, and I stopped making my battle groups so large. I used to make them like this will span the entire table, and that's not going to happen. I'm going to get broken up by a building, and I would get surprised every game when a building would break up my deployment. When it was inevitable. So yeah, I stopped being surprised by the terrain.
Well, I think now's the time we take a quick commercial break. And on the other side, let's have you walk us through a list. So with that, we'll be right back.
I'm Adam Padley, the best UK master, and you're listening to Countercharge.
This is Alex Chavez, 2018 Kings of War US Masters. You're listening to Countercharge.
I'm Andrew Whitehead. The reason direct misfire keeps calling undead S tier, and you're listening to Countercharge.
Welcome back to Countercharge. Next up, we've got Chet. He's going to share with us a list. What did you decide? What army did you decide to give us? I know you have so many good lists. You got goblins, you got kingdoms of men.
I'm going to let you pick.
How about this? Let's do them both.
Okay.
For the first one, you know, just give us a little background on what the list is and kind of where the inspiration came from.
Okay. So the first one was the pinup goblins. This is the one I brought to Masters. And I went through a couple of variations of it, but when I was listening to your show, I can't remember who said it, but they said, you know, goblin units should be about 100 points or on average, right? 23 drops for 2,300 points. And that just made sense to me. And from there, I was like, okay, here's how I accomplished that. Got in, figured out war trombones, figured out how this works. I'm like, okay, I don't want an all shooting list because that's boring. And it sets me up for bad matchups. And it doesn't let me answer all the questions. They might say, oh gosh, I hope you don't have speed. And I'll be like, I do have speed. I also have a lot of shooting. Or if they're like, haha, I'm stealthy. I'm like, cool. I'm still going to hit you in the flank with these mincers and you're still going to eat that. So like, I want to have answers to everything, but like So kind of an all-comers, but all-comer trash. I want to out-deploy my opponent, and then I want to build zany, like, goblin machines. So that was the motivation behind it. And one more thing about the motivation, sorry, was I was coming off of playing Nature, and remember, I played 3 Nature on Nature games in one weekend, and, like, a bad Snake Eyes loses you the game. A bad moment, somebody's needing you to explain Surge again. It takes so much longer because it's double pivots. And, you know, it was frustrating. And people weren't having fun. I could see it on their faces. It was like a stressful, not fun game. And I was like, what's more fun than goblins? Goblins are silly as hell. You get to kill them all the time. There's a million of them. And so there's kind of like, oh no, there's so many. But it wasn't a feel bad moment. So I really wanted my opponent to be like, okay, cool. I'm going to kill a bunch of them, but can I kill enough? I have no problem asking hard questions, but I don't want it to be not fun to answer them. So that's what brought goblins into play. That's what brought them on the table.
Well, let's go through the list unit by unit, you know, and I know you're a big fan of roles for those units. You know, when you hit the different unit, tell us what it's there for.
5 rabble hordes. Their job is to go there, be annoying, be unit strength, unlock stuff. So unlock, move up, take charges. That's their job. A horde of trolls with the staying stone. Their only job, they were there because defense 6 became a problem. And in certain games, I'd find that the deployment of the blocking terrain sometimes didn't allow me to get a horde into that angle. So trolls are a smaller footprint, and they're formidable enough on their own that they can fill that space, where goblins really struggle to do that with a lot of other units that can take a punch and actually move through it. So they made their way into the list exclusively to kill defense 6, plug in smaller gaps, and yeah, that's it. And also give unlocks. A Mobbies pack? These guys are great. People are sleeping on Mobbies packs. People forget how fast they are. Nimble Cav works really well. I don't care if it's only speed 6, but it's got Wild Charge D3. So you have to respect that 15 inches. Put them in the back line. They're going to find something. They're usually going to find a flank. Their job is be unit strength and threaten. If you kill this unit, there's a punishment for that. 3 War Trombones, their job is to kill stuff. Make a kill box, move up the field, kill stuff, make everyone nervous. They apply pressure early game, and late game they peel off wounded units. They're money. For 60 points with one Winged in there to give them elite, they're just perfect. 2 mincers. I tried running 3, but I ran into a problem of they would be outside of inspiring bubble, and dash 11 is just so vulnerable. Like 1 mind fog, a simple 10, they're gone. Make them roll 2 tens. That's a lot less likely. So I would run 2 of those on either side of the thing. They would stay just like a half inch back, and their job was to punish you for hitting that horde that you thought you would break, and you definitely didn't. And if they need to, they'll slow something down. And guess what? They can score late game too. So they were great. The Winget basically hid for most of the year. It would hide behind a building. If they didn't have shooting, they would come out and play. But very rarely did it. I didn't start using it in an aggressive way until the end of the season. But yeah, it would mostly give out that elite aura and then jump on a token at the end. Sometimes throw an extra couple bombs. But range 12, you get too aggressive with them, they get charged and they get killed. The King, Grony Snark, he does whatever he wants to anyone he wants to do it to sometimes. 60% of the time, he works every time. He is just goblin, zany, he's fun, he inspires, he punches things, and he zips around and punches something else because you thought you could kill him, but you didn't. The Flagget, I gave it the Bane Chant because now with that Strider aura, goblin hordes get flanks and they go through terrain to do it. So when they're doing it on 6s, no one cares. But 50 dice on 5s with crush 1, that's going to put some work in. That's going to do some damage. And he has a huge inspiring bubble. He's covering 3 hordes, 2 mincers, and 3 trombones at minimum, possibly a Winget. He's just doing work the whole time. He stands in the middle of the board and he's just inspiring this massive 18 inch bubble of inspiring for 65 points, absolute money. Troll Bruiser with the Blade of Slashing. He's going to go in and hit flanks, but his main job is to supervise the second battle group of two hordes. So you've got the three hordes in the center, and the two hordes are going to end up going somewhere else because terrain isn't going to let you put them all together. He's going to hang out with the other two hordes. He's there to punish you if you hit one of the hordes. He can also jump on tokens. He threatens a little further for a charge range. He can block somebody up if they want to get within 12. And the King's on Chariot, I would run three of them. I ran three of them, and a lot of times I'd throw them on a flank, all three of them on the same flank. People don't expect that. They think you're going to go 1-1-1 or you're going to go 2-1. You throw all three of them over there, they're adding 21 bow shots on fours, in addition to the bolt throwers, in addition to maybe the wing it, maybe not. And that's going to remove chaff. That removes hardier stuff than chaff. Flyers have to respect it. Everybody respects it. And they have that charge range of 18 inches too. So they can really thunder one, crush one. They're catching flanks mid and late game, and they're scoring in the last two phases. Those guys were absolutely critical. Running three of those, I mean, it's kind of the same way I use my generals, but just cheaper with shooting, and they don't fly. They were fantastic. Overall, 22 drops, 28 unit strength. So kind of light on unit strength, but goblins, most of it's going to die anyway.
How has it been doing on the table? I know you took it to Masters, but just give me a sense of how it's been operating on the table.
ACO, I had best battle. That was a goblin list, very similar. I went 4-1 at that. I went, I think, 3-1-1 at Nerdhammer. So I pulled out best battle again or second, somewhere in there. I got a couple of seconds and thirds throughout the season. I never got first, one days, but like we're talking GTs. And at Masters, I went 4-2. So like the list is definitely respectable, but I got to the point where other people are running a lot of goblins, and my local crew was starting to get like kind of like bummed out when I would bring the goblins on the table. So they went in the closet. They're hanging out. They'll get dusted off when I feel like it. But they had a good run last year. They put me to Masters. They had me second in the Mid-Atlantic region. I only ran Kingdoms of Men once last year, and once again, I pulled, I think, was it best battle? Second overall at Nerdhammer GT. Mid-Atlantic Open, got best general. Third place at, what is that one? Pilgrimage, and that was with Kingdoms of Men. So, you know, they've done really well for me. And then the other list, the Kingdoms of Men one, it's a variation on what I brought to Crossroads. This is a little different, a little more alpha, but Spear Phalanx, there's two of those with pikes. I don't give them Indomitable Will because I don't expect them to hurt things. So the once every couple of games where like each one would be wavered, it's like, all right, fine, I'll deal with it. Two regiments of knights, just plain. Their knights hit way above their point cost. They just don't take hits well. But when you're worried about my beast cav and you're worried about all the other things, and I'm shoving my, you know, flyers right up in your face because they're hidden behind stupid wizards, these guys can put out, they're the second wave that you didn't expect or that I made you deal with. And if you're not fast, they're the first wave. So knights are great. People are sleeping on knights. And there's all this talk of phalanx. There's nowhere near as much phalanx as everyone says there is. Beast cav. You gotta give them the full kit. Speed 10, fly, thunderous charge, vicious, all those upgrades, indomitable will. You gotta give them it. And one has J boots, and the second one's gonna have Helm of the Drunken Ram. Because mathematically, I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, okay, so I hit him in the front with my beast cav, these defense 6 dwarves, and if I hit him in the side, you know, hit him in the front with a general on winged beast at the same time, and mathematically, I hit 12 times. I should only do like 7 wounds on defense 6. I'm like, that's not going to cut it. This is not going to cut it. You got to roll a 10 twice. Like, that's not realistic. Even if you add in the beast, the general wing beast, and let's say he adds 3 more wounds, what am I at 10? I got to roll 7 twice. They needed the Helm of the Drunken Ram because that is the most expensive item that I typically give things. I don't like spending more than 20. And then I have a regiment of chariots. Chariots are great. They're not as good as you think they are, but they're just as good as they need to be. They are speed 9, thunder 2, brutal. for 135 points. And then for 5 points, you can give them 6 bow shots on fives. I've had those 6 bow shots pull up a wounded EJs, you know, like pick up a thing, turn around, fire your bow shots, get 1 damage. That unit's gone. People don't know what to do with them. They're just, they're speed 10, they're speed 9. So flyers are going to outfly them, but flyers don't want to waste their charge on a 140 point unit. So like they kind of let you bully them with these chariots. Other like these super elite cab units that are speed 8, they don't want to lose their Thunderous. So they let the chariots bully them. Plus Brutal's awesome. And sometimes you roll in fours, you could spike a good one. You know, you spike a good one and that's enough. People are worried about you spiking. And if you don't spike, you're like, whatever, they're just a thing. And they're 20 points more than the Spear Phalanx. So that's kind of where my head goes, is like, what am I going to get more value out of? More pressure from a distance or another unit that can carry tokens? So that's where the chariots come into play. They score, they shoot, they move. All right. 2 ballistas. I dropped it down from 3 because the list doesn't have enough shooting to make shooting a real threat. But it needs to be enough of a threat to worry chaff, and like vulnerable units need to be worried, but I don't need to be able to pull off like a Horde of Forsaken or whites or something with it. I'm not relying on it for that. 2 wizards on pegs, 1 with no spells, 1 with the Inspiring Talisman and Mind Fog. So the entire Inspiring Talisman guy, he can have a variety of jobs. He's going to hang out with a battle group. This is a flexible battle group scenario. A lot of these fast elements can go together. But he's going to hang out with 1 of them. There's typically 2 kind of like in the middle ones. One has a General Unwinged Beast as its babysitter. The other one has this guy as the babysitter. But in a token carrying scenario, this guy carries a token. He hangs out with the 2 pike hordes and they just walk. They just walk places and do things. Then the other one, the one that's only 65 points, that one's job is to score or die. Sometimes both. That's not how Kings works. One or the other, but it usually just blocks up another unit and saves a more valuable piece from getting chaffed up. It runs interference for the generals. I did add a hero on Pegasus because there was a few games at Crossroads where I thought it would be nice to have 3 attacks. If I was like, I hit a cannon at one point with a wizard and I'm like, I mean, I'm blocking his view, but he can hit me with that grape shot, and I'm not doing any wounds because I only have 1 attack. Even if I triple it, 5 attacks on, or 3 attacks on 5, I'm not doing anything. But triple my 3 attacks, crush 1, okay, that's something. Or there was a game I played against, I went against Basileans, and I would throw it into the Angels, and it would block up 1 group of Angels, but then they would back up, pivot, and the other one could get into something. So like if I was able to hit them, ground them, now I've just blocked all the views of multiple units, and it would only cost me a few more points. So I've played around with the hero on peg. I modeled 1 up. I like him. I think I'm going to keep 1. I don't know if I go beyond that, but that's my thing. And then 3 generals on Winged Beast. They're critical to a Kings of Men list. When I didn't know how to play the generals on Winged Beast, I lost a lot of games. When I learned how to play them, I won a lot of games, and they're the linchpin to the army. It comes in at 15 unit strength, or I'm sorry, 15 total units. A little light for me, only 13 score, which I'm not super happy about. So those ballistas might be on the go, but unit strength 26. So those are my 2 units. That's what everybody does.
You got any plans for the Kings of Men list to change it or evolve it? I mean, you got other units in the wings that you're painting up, just thinking you're going to add to it.
The ballistas are on the chopping block. I would love to get another wizard in there, and I could do it with the points. I might lose an item and pick up like a militia mob. There's options. I just don't want to drop my shooting to a point. And I know there's like, I could drop a ballista and add 60 points of lightning bolts to like 3 different wizards. But then that gives them too many jobs. So like, my opinion, you want to have like 2 jobs per unit. I don't think 3 and 4. It's like a wizard with 5 spells. Like you're only going to be able to cast 1 a turn. And if this wizard is eventually going to get thrown away and killed, why am I spending 20 points, which is a third of the cost of a wizard with no spells, to get off 1 round of lightning bolts? Lightning bolt 3, what am I going to do? 1.5 hits maybe a wound, let's say one wound, before I'm not spending 20 points for one wound. I'd much rather spend 5 points for the chariot to have six bow shots that are probably going to get that same one wound for a quarter of the cost. So another chariot has been definitely a consideration, but like I said, your guys talking about the orcs have made me start thinking maybe giants might be a solution to some of my defense six and my terrain mitigation problems. You might see a giant in the list. You might not. I already got one painted up.
For those listening to this, we'll have both the lists in the show notes. So if you want to go and painstakingly go through and review what we've just talked about, PDFs of the list will be included in the show notes. We're coming to the point of the show, Chat, where we get to, are you ready for the questions? Are you ready?
I don't know, but let's try it.
So again, just the rules here are, you know, we're going to hit you these rapid fire questions. Just give us the answer that pops into your head. What's your favorite army?
Kingdoms of Men.
What is your least favorite scenario?
Stockpile. Not because it's a bad scenario, because I suck at it.
What drives you creatively or competitively?
Being unique.
When your opponent rolls snake eyes?
I feel bad for him, but sometimes it's great if I'm losing.
When you roll snake eyes?
It can be frustrating, but it's always funny.
What is your favorite hobby material?
Green stuff, but I would say anything from Dollar Tree.
What is your biggest gaming pet peeve?
I'm going to go with the classic, people who blame their dice.
If you had to replace miniature wargaming with another hobby, what would it be?
I'd say board gaming. I used to write books. I'd probably get into that a little bit again.
Well, maybe there's a novel for Panathor, you know, a Wing to Star novel in your future.
I wrote kids' books. So it was like the shark was afraid to lose his tooth because he didn't think the tooth fairy could find him underwater.
What other miniature wargame would you not want to play?
Sigmar just seems silly, and 40K, they just look angry when they play it.
And finally, if you had a romantic evening with Ronnie Renton, what would you whisper sweetly to him?
Keep making the best game ever.
Well, that's fantastic. Chat, we really appreciate you coming out of the Lispiller studio and sharing your insights. What's interesting is I get that impression that that's kind of your preference. Lots of options and lots of tools on the table.
Yeah.
Most people come and say, here's my 12 nails. You just take the bucket and dump it over. Here's my 52 nails. Right. You know, you're like, hey, what do you really appreciate you coming on? So final thoughts.
Hey man, Countercharge is great. King's War is awesome. Best community out there. Thanks for reaching out to me. I was really, really honored by that. So thank you.
You know, I never had a Nerdhammer guy on before. So that's something, right?
I'm not a Nerdhammer.
No. Oh, yeah, well, that's what I'm saying, though. That's there. The point, right?
I see what you're
saying. I went to Loaded Dice first, right? So, I mean, that's the point, right?
That is the point. Yeah, like I said, in March, we're looking into running Loaded Dice, so fully loaded GT. So it's going to be in the Wilkes-Barre Scranton region, Wilkes-Barre area in Pennsylvania, northeastern Pennsylvania. Keep an eye open for that. We're in the planning stages of that.
Where can folks follow you on social media?
The Loaded Dice Facebook group. So you can Loaded Dice Gaming Club, jump on that. Pretty much it. I don't have a big social media presence other than that.
I think that's going to do us tonight. Until next time, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by commenting on the Countercharge Kings of War podcast Facebook group. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.
Well, as soon as I get my dice and my book, that was for my wife. I've been asking her forever to order them. It's quiet. You're gonna get me in trouble. All right.
Nothing like getting heckled.